I mean, both Medicare and ACA rules are completely established by the federal government. That's really a large disparity, and I think it really puts a heavy burden on low-income Medicare beneficiaries.
Hello, and welcome to HIMSCast. I'm Susan Morse, Executive Editor of Healthcare Finance News. I have the pleasure of introducing you to Wendell Primus, who is a visiting fellow with the Brookings Institution. Welcome, Wendell. It's great to have you on HIMSCast.
It's good to be with you. Thanks very much.
I understand you're joining us from D.C. today from the Brookings Institution, where you just recently published a study on about the high cost of care. But before we get into that, can you please tell us about yourself and your work as a visiting fellow?
Yes, I'd be glad to. I had many wonderful years on Capitol Hill, the last 18 of which I worked for Speaker Pelosi, sometimes Leader Pelosi. And I was her kind of her senior budget and health policy person and helped write the Affordable Care Act, as well as the drug pricing legislation and many other bills as well. So I came here when she stepped down as speaker. I came, looked for employment, came here to Brookings, and have promised the foundation world that I'm going to write 6 white papers. One is on how to restore solvency to Social Security, how to reduce poverty among the low-income elderly, how to increase legal immigration, because I think that's a key to our workforce shortage problems. You know, when the baby boom reaches their peak years in terms of needing long-term care, where's the labor force going to come from? And then we'll also, the last paper we'll do is on how to develop a social insurance program for long-term care. And then there'll be short papers on Medicare and Medicaid as well.
I could talk to you or listen to you talk about these subjects, any one of them, and it would be fascinating. And I'd love to hear more about your work on the Hill. But we're talking today about your paper with Paris Rich Bingham. Did I say Paris's name correctly, Wendell?
You did.
Yeah. And you both did a paper on reducing premiums for low-income Medicare beneficiaries. Can you talk about what was the purpose of your work and what did the research tell you?
Well, I've known this for some time that Medicare beneficiaries with the same income and family size were paying a lot more than affordable care beneficiaries. And the difference was quite striking. So, for example, ACA beneficiaries do not pay any premiums until they reach 150% of poverty. But for an elderly single, they're already paying $2,500 in premiums, which is about 11.5% of their income. For an elderly couple at 150% of poverty, they're paying over $5,000 in Medicare premiums, or about 17% of their income at 150% of poverty. And for 2 federal programs, I mean, both Medicare and ACA rules are completely established by the federal government. That's really a large disparity. And I think it really puts a heavy burden on low-income Medicare beneficiaries.
Wendell, what you're saying is if I have ACA insurance, I'm paying far less in premiums than if I'm on Medicare, regular, original Medicare, and paying these subsidies and paying premiums.
That is correct. And you're correct to talk a little bit a difference between fee-for-service Medicare and Medicare Advantage. Medicare Advantage sometimes gives you a bit of a break on these Medicare premiums, but for the most part, not. And so there's a huge disparity between what Medicare beneficiaries pay and ACA beneficiaries with low incomes.
Can I want to take that up for a moment because Medicare Advantage, of course, has been growing. I understand it's now 50% of people who have Medicare for coverage have Medicare Advantage now. And it's advertised as being basically no premiums. So are you saying that it I'm sorry, maybe I misunderstood you, but did you say there's really not that much difference?
Yeah, there's not that much difference. I think, I mean, some Medicare Advantage recipients get a bit of a break, and most of them get a break on their Part D, the drug coverage, but not on the Part B side of things, which is where the big premium is, $174.70 per month for most Medicare beneficiaries,
Including those on Medicare Advantage.
including those on Medicare Advantage.
Interesting on that. But back to your study, what did it tell you about reducing premiums? Was the purpose of the study to come up with recommendations for how to reduce these premiums?
Yes, that was the pr well, the first part of was really to understand the differences between the premiums paid by AC, the Affordable Care Act beneficiaries and Medicare beneficiaries. And then it was to establish what we thought the premium should be in Medicare. And we basically followed ACA roughly. And this is going to require legislation. The Secretary of HHS cannot change these premiums. I mean, right now, what premiums in Medicare have to equal 25% of the cost of the program. And it's the same premium for basically everybody. And then some people with low incomes have something called Medicare savings programs that can reduce that premium, but the participation rates are very low. And the subsidy for Part B ends at 135% of poverty. So those programs basically don't work. And so what we did in this program, we established a new federal program that we think can be administered by the Social Security Administration, much like the income-related premiums are administered today. If you're the richest 9% of elderly beneficiaries, you pay an income-related premium, and that is administered through the Social Security Administration with some information coming from the Internal Revenue Service. And we would do the same way for all Medicare beneficiaries and reduce premiums by significantly. So about 26, 27 million Medicare beneficiaries will see a lower premium if our recommendations were adopted by Congress.
I want to ask you, would this raise the government funding for Medicare?
No, I mean, there are several different ways of paying for this. I mean, this is an expensive proposition. This would cost somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 to 45 billion per year. And we don't believe, given the size of our federal deficits, we should increase federal deficits. So we would have higher income Medicare beneficiaries pay for the fact that we're lowering the Medicare beneficiaries. And their premium would return to what it was originally when the Medicare program was established. It would potentially equal, for the higher income Medicare beneficiaries, it would equal 50% of program cost. Now, Congress could choose to do it a different way. I think the evidence is clear. We overpay Medicare Advantage plans right now substantially. We could increase the net income investment tax. So there are other ways of offsetting the cost of this program. But this is a substantial revision of Medicare premiums for low-income elderly.
Yes, I was want to ask, what do you think the support for this is or would be in Congress?
Well, that's a good question. I don't see Congress. I mean, I think Congress has got to do many things in 2025. They've got to restore solvency to the hospital insurance program. They've got to restore solvency to Social Security. There's the Trump tax cuts. There's the ACA beneficiaries that also need to have the current premium structure extended. And then they're going to have to raise the federal debt limit. So I think in the context of all those changes, something could be worked out here, but Congress would have to determine that. But the evidence is very clear here. There is a big disparity between what ACA beneficiaries pay and Medicare beneficiaries with the same income and family size.
Are you optimistic, Wendell? I mean, you've worked on the Hill, you've seen important legislation get passed. Nobody thought there would be a health care law coming out of the federal government, and you worked on the ACA. I mean, you've seen things happen.
Yeah, no, I think one of the best things I ever did on staffing for the speaker, and I told her this, was the drug pricing. And a lot of my friends did not think we would ever get so that the Medicare program could negotiate the rates of our the drugs where we spend the most money. But it happened, and that's another place where they could find some additional revenue if needed. So I think the disparity is so large here that something will be done, maybe not quite the way we outline in this paper. But again, when the disparity between the elderly here are paying more, that's typically not the situation you think of. You think of the elderly paying less, not more.
And there's a lot of elderly, of course, and they've got clout as the baby boomers always have since, when they were born, it was diapers and toys, and now it's Medicare and whatever else. But we only have a few more minutes, so I'd like to get to how this would benefit. If this passes, how would it affect care for patients? And how would it financially affect hospitals and insurers, or would it?
It would not affect insurers or hospitals. I mean, the benefit structure here remains the same. The only thing we're changing here is how much premiums Medicare beneficiaries have to pay, and we would offset the cost. So there's no change in what hospitals get reimbursed or doctors get reimbursed. That all remains the same. And so again, if Congress follows these recommendations, there's about 27 million low-income Medicare beneficiaries that would pay less. And so for taking that 150% person again, a single individual paying 2,500, we would reduce that all the way to zero. And then above 150% of poverty, premiums would very slowly increase. And then you'd reach a break-even point at around 50,000 for a single individual, around 86,000 or so for a couple. So anybody with income below those amounts would pay less. Elderly with incomes above those amounts would pay somewhat more.
Do you think, thank you for this, Wendell. It's interesting to hear this, and I haven't heard anybody else talk about this. What I'm wondering is when you say it doesn't affect hospitals, are there patients or consumers or people right now who just do not have Medicare at all? And maybe they don't have ACA insurance. They're uninsured because they don't want to pay any premium. So do you think this would help get more people insured, which would in turn help hospitals with any charity care or uncompensated care?
I don't think there would be much of a change here because the elderly really are protected. I mean, they're not, some of the elderly could participate in the Medicaid program and they're not participating. But almost everybody that is eligible for Medicare participates in Medicare because the subsidy overall is pretty generous. And, medical expenses for the elderly are substantially more than medical expenses for typically non-elderly person. It might affect legal immigrants to some extent, but I think for the most part, it's not going to change the number of people who are insured.
Right. Is there anything I haven't addressed that you want to say about this study and what you found? Was there anything that surprised you?
Well, I think the only thing that surprised me was really the extent, the size of this disparity between ACA beneficiaries and Medicare beneficiaries. And I think the overall setting for this paper is helping low elderly now have higher poverty rates than children, even with the elimination or the reduction in the child tax credit. I think we need to do much better by the elderly. Many of them are not participating in the Supplemental Security Income Program. So this is one endeavor to make low-income elderly better off. And there are more to come.
Thank you so much. I'll be interested to see where this goes and perhaps see it and talk with you in the future about this.
No, thank you very much for your interest and glad to do this interview.